Hello everybody, welcome to the podcast. This is Wow Cricket on clicksportsnow.com. It's me, Cyrus John, and I have with me in the studio cricket commentator and expert Raman Bhanot. Welcome to the studio, Raman.
Thank you so much, Cyrus. It's a pleasure being on the show.
It's a pleasure having you here. A couple of days back, we were discussing about how the Indians struggled against England 4-0. That was a story way behind. And well, it was building up to the series that India lost again, unfortunately. Back then, it was 4-0. And well, we were expecting with the kind of batting attack that we had, the likes of Pujara, Kohli, all these batsmen averaging somewhere near 50 or 60. We thought, at least, as far as being an Indian fan, I was a bit optimistic that they would go on to England, perform well. Everything was building up, Ishant Sharma firing, guns blazing, everything going perfect. The English, they were battered against the Australians in the Ashes. They lost to Sri Lanka 1-0 just the test match before. And we thought that it's going to be the same story. But suddenly, I don't know what happened. India going there. First test match, brilliant. Everything going smooth. Murali Vijay middling, cutting the English bowlers all over the park. But Lords, and then suddenly, as if they were building up, they reached the mountaintop. And they just got tired, got too cold there, and they thought of jumping off the mountain.
Well, the climb was steep and they came down like an avalanche, don't they? But really, I think it's a age-old story that the Indian team is known to get some teams back into their winning ways or get teams back into their winning habit. If a batsman's not scoring runs, play against India. If a bowler's not taking wickets, play against India. If you're not winning a test series, play against India. I think that seems to be the mool mantra.
Well, you must be talking about Alistair Cook there, aren't you?
Yes, I'm talking about England. I'm talking about Alistair Cook. I'm talking about a lot of their bowlers who've taken some pasting. Remember what happened to James Anderson in Australia in the Ashes? So, yes, I think it was a morale-boosting win for England and a fresh lease of life for Alistair Cook as captain of the England Test side.
Well, it's a question, Raman, that many of the Indian fans would like to know is, why is it that every time that India goes out to play, beat South Africa, New Zealand, England, Australia, they struggle, and whenever they're playing the subcontinent, I know the conditions are suited to the Indian style of play, but it's been very long. I'm sure it's been very long that the Indians can't use this as an excuse now.
Well, to be fair to the Indian side, I thought they played great cricket in South Africa in the Test series. They lost due to one very bad session that the Indians played in the second Test match. And, you know, first Test, they should have forced a win. They weren't able to force a win in the first Test. That led to a draw. The second Test, they were pretty much on even keel with the South African team. And then one bad session turned the tide in South Africa's favor. And from there on, the South Africans didn't let the game slip. In New Zealand, again, you probably feel that India had their moments but weren't able to capitalize on it. And that's where they let the game slip. And talk about what happened in England. Well, I think that's a debate that we're going to have right now in the studio, and that's going to be a long-drawn one.
But this is a trend that the Indians have been following for quite a long time, Raman. They start off well, and then suddenly, when we can assume that the Indians are going to do well, they start falling apart, their performances drop, and especially the bowling, the batting, even the fielding, that seems to be dropping. So after giving us, in fact, they lull the Indian media into a false hope that they're going to perform well after the show they give in the first session or maybe the first test match. But suddenly, they tend to disappoint us.
Well, for one, I think as far as this particular series is concerned, there were three or four issues that bogged the Indians down. First and foremost, I think not getting the mix right, not getting the right playing 11 on the park made a huge impact. Whether it was due to injury or just bad team selection, I think that hurt India's chances after the second test. Up till that time, you felt that India had done everything right in terms of putting the right 11 on the park and the best 11 that they could. From there on, I think their thinking got muddled. After winning at Lords, after 28 long years, and registering a win on the ground, going 1-0 up in the series, the moment you start going on the defensive because your strike bowler is injured and cannot play, and therefore you try and play an extra batsman in the side, you got Rohit Sharma in. You look back at the team selection the Indians did after the second test match. They won the second test. There was huge euphoria around the Indian test win. The media was singing praises about the Indian side. But what happened then? Ishant got injured. He'd hurt his ankle in that tremendous spell that he bowled towards the end when he bowled India to a win in the second test. So the third test match, you wondered what is it that you need to do. You don't have your pace bowler, so you went defensive. You tried to play an extra batsman. You dropped Stuart Binney. You got in Rohit Sharma because you wanted to strengthen and lengthen your batting. You played Pankaj Singh. Unfortunately, for Pankaj, the catch wasn't taken in his very first spell. Otherwise, maybe we would have seen a different performance from Pankaj Singh in that test match. But from then on, the thinking was muddled from India. The next test match, you drop Rohit Sharma, get a Ravichandran Ashwin into the side. You're trying to bolster your bowling. I don't think it cut a lot of ice in terms of the way the Indians planned their approach.
Well, it's very interesting. You just mentioned that that catch drop of Pankaj Singh's bowling. Raman, many are citing that being the moment that India lost the test match. Ravindra Jadeja at third slip. Ravindra Jadeja, mind you, dropping a catch. And it's been the story ever since. 9 drop catches in the test match behind the wicket by the Indian slip fielders. And it was a shambolic display of slip fielding. And suddenly, whenever the red ball is their hand, they tend to stutter. Why?
I think, Cyrus, you were talking about this offline. When you're losing, everything gets highlighted. When you're winning, then everything gets camouflaged. England dropped 14 catches compared to India's 9 that you talked about, but nobody's talking about it. That's purely because England were winning after that and they won the series 1-3. They drew some flak, of course, initially after being 1-0 down. But then that got rolled under the carpet, didn't it? But coming back to that Ravindra Jadeja issue, I think Jadeja is a fantastic fielder, but not in the slip cordon. He's a great fielder in that backward point, cover point region, where he's very athletic. He, since the left hand is his natural moving hand, for a right-handed batsman, when he's fielding at backward point, the ball generally slides off the face of the bat and travels in that region. So a left-handed fielder, you remember Yuvraj Singh, has been tremendous in that position. Ravindra Jadeja has been tremendous in that position because, the ball's traveling to their natural hand, which is the left. And they have an advantage over a right-handed fielder in that region. The second part is India really haven't invested in great slip catchers. If you look at the one-day squad, where India have probably held on to the catches better in the region behind the stumps, it's because you have a certain Suresh Raina who stands at slips. Or earlier before him, you used to have a Virendra Sehwag who has been underrated as a slip catcher, but I think he's been very effective. But Raina in recent times is your regulation slip catcher and he's fantastic in that region.
The disappointing bit is he's not in the test side.
Well, yes, of course, not picked in the test squad because of his ineptitude against the short of length ball, or probably his inability to play the longer format, or so the selectors think. But India didn't really invest. The fielders that dropped catches behind the stumps, someone like a Shikhar Dhawan, someone like a Ravindra Jadeja, someone like even a Virat Kohli, are not natural slip catchers. Jadeja is great in the 30-yard circle. So too is Virat Kohli. But slip catching, I think, is a specialized position. Something that India haven't really been able to work out. The one player they used to have in the slip cordon, and you'd remember this, over the last 2 years, and they've used him a lot, but not with great success, it's Ravichandran Ashwin, who generally stands at first slip. In one days, as well as in test matches, because you want to hide him somewhere. You don't want him in the outfield. You don't want him. He's not got a great throwing arm. He's not the quickest mover. So you hide him in the slip cordon, and therefore you try to train him. And remember, there was a startling statistic about Ravichandran Ashwin, and it relates to T20, that in the last 2 years, Ashwin himself has taken 18 catches in T20s, but he's dropped 13.
Well, the amount of experiments he does with his fingers, it's a miracle that he's managed to pick up those 18 catches. But coming back to slip catching, Raman, why not this? Have Suresh Raina as a 13th man. Get somebody injured and get Raina back in the slips if you're dropping so many catches.
You're talking about cricket being a gentleman's game?
Well, T20 has come in now, Raman. So I won't call it a gentleman's game. I've seen the bout between Pollard and Mitchell Starc in the IPL.
But you didn't have to go far. You saw a bout even in this series, albeit it wasn't captured on camera. It was the Ravindra Jadeja and James Anderson spat. And I think that was another turning point in the series. That spat that these two had, the Indians took a very strong stance against James Anderson, wanted to take the matter further, tried to push for a level 3 offense, which could not be adjudicated by the match referee, but they had to be an ICC match commissioner appointed, a judicial commissioner appointed to actually hold a hearing and hear both sides and then examine evidence. But for a level 2 offense, which is what was actually against Ravindra Jadeja, the English team had also lodged a complaint against Jadeja being involved in that incident, and that was a level 2 offense, which the match referee had the right and the jurisdiction to actually hear and decide on and give punishment, which is why Ravindra Jadeja got punished. James Anderson didn't, because there was nothing on tape. There was no footage about how Anderson had actually sledged Jadeja or whether he actually pushed him in the staircase leading up to the dressing rooms.
That's a surprise, Raman. Why is it every time that the Indian players go overseas, they end up getting themselves into controversies? Back in Australia, I remember Harbhajan and Andrew Simons had a spat. And this time, another spinner, the part-time spinner being Ravindra Jadeja. Many of the Indian media, I'm sure, they fabricated the news too much about they getting him into a tussle or something in the dressing room. But after the test match, when the test match at Lord's ended, Ravindra Jadeja got James Anderson a run out. And then suddenly what he does, he went up to Anderson, he shook his hand, and he got him off the pitch. So that was something that clearly said that there was no kind of a dispute between them now.
I think the issue got blown out of proportion. Of course, Anderson can be a cricketer who can really get into your face. He can say quite a few things. In fact, Jadeja isn't the first one to face his verbal volleys. But the point is, I think the Indian team pushed that matter too far and took a higher ground. And since they'd pushed the matter as far as they did, they wanted to take it all the way, with the Indian captain also getting involved and taking a stance. I think scaling the level of offense down to a level 2 offense would have probably meant James Anderson could have been banned for a test match. But taking it to a level 3 offense and trying to get him banned for 2 test matches, or have a severity of punishment handed out to him, in the end didn't work in India's favor.
Well, just coming back to the test matches, how it went down, Raman. Now, just shifting our focus to the opening pair. Now, Murali Vijay was brilliant. He was amongst the top scorer for the Indian side. But a very interesting fact, in the last 31 innings for the Indians, they have never seen a 50-run opening partnership. The last one that they saw was 63 between Gautam Gambhir and Abhinav Mukund back in England, 2011. So since then, they haven't seen a 50-run partnership. One batsman holds fort, the other one stutters, and this is turning out to be another trend that perpetuates for a long time.
A lot of times you see this happen with a lot of test-playing countries. You've got a set opening pair and you expect a lot from them. But the moment that pair or that partnership's broken, or you find a loss of form for one of the two partners, you'll find these stats coming to play. The big question is, what are the pluses and minuses for India? I think backing Shikhar Dhawan was what India did, because he'd shown superlative form in the home series against the Australians, and followed that up with great performances in England, albeit in the one-day format in the Champions Trophy. So you felt that Shikhar Dhawan was a player you had invested in, and though there were questions asked about whether he would come good in English conditions, I think the selectors and team management felt he needed to be given a chance. Murali Vijay, for me, I thought was the biggest plus of this series at the top of the order in test matches, because Murali Vijay once again showed that he can change gears. He can be a totally different batsman when he's playing the T20 format in the IPL and go hammer and tongs, but then he can scale down, get into first gear and play test match cricket as well, something that he showed you beautifully.
He was just amazing. The first innings of 146 at Trent Bridge just set the tone for him throughout the series. But coming back to Gautam Gambhir, you just mentioned 63 with Abhinav Mukund back in 2011. But the two test matches that he got the opportunity after Shikhar Dhawan was dropped, do you think after that dismal performance from Gambhir, it's end of test match cricket for him, or even international cricket for that matter?
Well, Gambhir wouldn't be hoping so, but it was disappointing to see Gambhir looked woefully, out of sorts. He didn't know where he belonged. Probably one innings, he got a beauty of a delivery to be dismissed, but unfortunately, he didn't really look as if, that period of being out of international cricket took its toll, because I think he looked very rusty. But the Indians had no option, because Shikhar Dhawan wasn't firing. I, for one, probably would have made some changes in the batting lineup. Not really changed the opener, the idea that is, of course, drop Shikhar and get Gambhir in. You had to do that, having lost the, you know, the third test. But I think somewhere down the line, the batting order could have been shuffled to see an Ajinkya Rahane bat at number 3, or at least, if not 3, at least number 4. Because Chiteshwar Pujara was found out in this series. Virat Kohli was James Anderson's bunny. He was probably, you know, he didn't have a clue what Anderson was doing. And that really tells you a lot about the quality of bowling that James Anderson was also producing. I thought it was one of the best bowling performances by a swing bowler in recent times. I thought James Anderson, in English conditions, is without a doubt the world's best bowler. And I'd say that I think in English conditions, he can be better than Dale Steyn.
I just read an article in the newspapers recently, Raman, that the cricket board, the Indian cricket board, had barred all the wags, the wives and girlfriends of cricketers, to go with them to tours. Now, you just mentioned Virat Kohli struggled in the tour. Many of our listeners would like to know why was the reason that Kohli was struggling. Well, everybody was struggling, but Kohli particularly, because we know what Kohli has set standards of, averaging 50 in test matches. Even in South Africa, he got 100, and New Zealand as well. So him dropping to such levels was surprising for many Indian fans.
I think it was very surprising for Virat Kohli himself, the way he got out. I think it's not to do with the partner he had with him during the tour as much as it did with probably falling into a rut. When you're on such a long tour, let's face it, the Indian team, after a very, very long time, played a 5-test series. You know, you're not used to that format. Even at home, the best that you've done in recent times is a 4-test series against the Australians, or probably against the England side when they had toured earlier. But against the West Indies, what do you have? You had a 2-test series, because there's so much of T20 and one-day cricket being played. Tests are taking a backseat. So this tour was really a litmus test for the Indian team. A 78-day tour away from home can take a toll. I mean, it's like space travel. You know, you're away from home, you're away from your regular familiar surroundings in alien conditions, eating alien food, being amongst people, you know, you don't really relate to, no outlet. So if, you know, you had a companion along, I think it should have helped more than caused damage.
I wonder why didn't that help. So, and now shifting.
Oh, Cyrus, I wonder, there's a slight tone of wryness in your voice. I wonder whether you're imagining yourself to be in Kohli's position.
It's not that, Raman. I've just heard a very common phrase that's always said, behind every man's success is a woman. Well, the tabloids just spreading out news about a woman being behind Kohli's, in fact, disappointment. Do you think that somewhere down the line in the future, other batsmen will have to face this?
Interesting point. What if Kohli had gotten a lot of runs? Would every batsman have been allowed a companion? Just because, you know, he got runs doesn't mean the others will. But or if he hasn't, that doesn't mean others won't.
He didn't. That's the thing. That's exactly the speculation. He didn't get the runs. So that's why the media have a reason to talk about it.
Well, the media's always talked about it, hasn't it, Cyrus? Even we're talking about it, that's for sure. But I think that's a choice that the batsman takes. And I think when you're on such a long tour, a lot of other boards have allowed families to travel along with the players or join them in the middle of the tour. So I think there's too much that's being read into this. I personally feel there's more of a technical aspect that got into Virat Kohli's mind. He was falling to one typical kind of dismissal, which was the fact that he didn't know where his off stump was. He was a lot of times caught in the slip cordon or behind the stumps, fishing at a delivery which was at, you know, say his sixth off stump, where his sixth off stump would have been. So when you're not aware as a batsman where your off stump is, or the fact that you're shuffling a little too across, it's a typical thing that happens in muscle memory. You've got a, as a trigger movement while taking your stance, or when you're just about you know, facing up to a bowler, that you lose sight of where you should have been in terms of position. And since you're playing back-to-back test cricket, you know, you're traveling from one venue to another, not too much of a gap to go back to the basics and then rework, you know, what's gone wrong. I think, you know, you just keep stumbling from one debacle to another.
I was just staying on the point of a technique being a man's guard. Chiteshwar Pujara, he had been perfect before this series, averaging more than 16 test matches. He had played in South Africa, New Zealand. He was perfect everywhere. But suddenly coming to England, there was a drop of form. He had an average of 22, something we don't expect for the class of Chiteshwar Pujara. Again, another batsman being at the mercy of the England pace and swing. So, do you expect that from Pujara as well, Raman?
remember, you never expected that from Rahul Dravid, the wall. And it happened to him in England in 2011. It happened to VVS Lakshman in 2011. It happened to the little master himself, Sachin Tendulkar, 3 years ago. So it can happen to the best of batsmen. And that's not taking anything away from the caliber of Pujara, or for that matter, even the caliber of and quality of Virat Kohli. I think it's a lot to do with form as well. And that's where I feel probably the Indian team management erred. The man who was really showing the full face of the bat, who was getting the ball of the meat of the blade and timing it well, was Ajinkya Rahane. He's opened for India in the past. Not just for India, he's opened, in fact, even for his state team in the past. I'm not saying test matches, but limited overs he's opened for India. He should have been given the opportunity to bat at number 3, at least see off the new ball. And if Virat Kohli was struggling against the new seeming ball, because India, as you said, didn't have too many 50 plus partnerships, it meant Pujara was in before the ball had lost any of its shine. And the way Pujara batted, even Virat Kohli was in before the ball had lost its shine. Because India, more often than not, after the third test onwards, found themselves literally, what, 20 for 3. So these two batsmen, against the new ball, struggled. They struggled. So maybe Ajinkya Rahane in that position might have been able to stem the rot. And given the breathing space for someone like Kohli to come in when the ball was slightly older, and maybe we would have seen a completely different performance from Virat Kohli. I'm not saying shield him in every series, but when a batsman's going through that lean patch and he's struggling, especially against one bowler who can be very devastating with the moving ball, you need to blunt the threat rather than keep exposing your main weapon to someone and psychologically leave such an impact on the batsman that it even showed in the one days that Virat Kohli played later.
So moreover, when we could say the four batsmen who had to struggle against that new ball, somewhere down the line, it was like a blessing in disguise for Bhuvneshwar Kumar.
Well, I think Bhuvneshwar Kumar saved India the blushes with a few knocks that he played. And in fact, was instrumental in providing a lot of respectability to the Indian total. 4 half centuries for what, a number 8 or a number 9 batsman, I think is a tremendous batting effort. But it also means, yes, that when he came out to bat, the ball had actually grown older and therefore he could play his shots. This is something that the openers should have done, blunted the new ball attack, or if not the openers, the number 3 bat.
Another interesting fact, he was the highest wicket taker for the Indians with 19 wickets after Ishant Sharma's spell of 7 wickets at Lords. He had picked up 14 wickets. So if Ishant Sharma would have been fit, things would have been way different for the Indians.
Oh, ifs and buts. You never really can talk about it. And when I say buts, I only talk about the one with the single T. The idea isn't really to go that route here, because I think if Ishant would have been fit, the Indian team balance would have been far better in the 3rd, 4th and 5th test match.
You mentioned balance again, Raman. I'll be coming back to that. Gary and Joe Root, they were perfect. I'm just shifting focus to the England batting now. It's not that the Indians were performing terribly. The England team players, they were performing better, especially that middle order at number 3 balance, at number 4 Joe Root. They were the ones who held fort for England as far as that middle order were concerned. 2 top scorers for the England side.
The first couple of tests, you find that they struggled a tad. And I feel, again, there's a reason for this. Bhuvneshwar Kumar bowled beautifully. The first couple of test matches, I thought he was very, very good. Got the ball to move, got the ball to dart around and had the English batsman all at sea. What he didn't get at the other end from the 3rd test onwards was support. You know, barring that second innings performance in the 2nd test where Ishant came back very strongly and one other bowling spell that he had prior to that, you need someone at the other end who can take wickets. Bhuvneshwar Kumar, by the end of the series, was the most overbowled Indian bowler. Every time the Indian captain was in a dilemma, of course, since he was the highest wicket taker, the captain looks at him as the go-to man. But, you need more options. You can't have one bowler taking the workload. And he's a swing bowler, mind you, not with the strongest built and not the strongest frame. So, he was required to be used in shorter bursts. In the end, he ended up becoming the stock bowler. And this was very similar to what had happened 3 years ago to another state mate of his, Praveen Kumar, who I thought was brilliant in the first couple of test matches. But by the time he got to the 3rd and 4th, he was laboring because he was being used so often by Dhoni.
Well, it was a miracle that the Indian bowlers were managing to walk off after that dismal show at the Oval. But as we look at the performances, Raman, innings in 50, in fact, a 266-run loss at Southampton, and it went on to the aggravate for the Indians. An innings and 54 runs defeat at Manchester, and then at the Oval, an innings 244 runs, and in that second innings, the Indians were bundled out for 94 runs. And that was the end of it. I mean, that was the killer blow from the Indians, ending the dismal run in the Test matches. And then suddenly things were going around that the teams need change, the coach needs to be replaced. There were even talks going that former Indian captain Ravi Shastri would be called in to become the director of the Indian side.
Which he actually did for the one-day series, yes. It showed a clear, muddled mindset. I'm using an oxymoron there, clear and muddled in the same sentence back to back. But yes, that's exactly what it was. The Indian mindset looked very muddled after the second test. You were 1-0 up in the series. I thought the Indians needed to be more aggressive and go for a win to try and clinch the series. The first test was drawn. The moment you'd tried for a win in the third test, there was no way in which England would have come back and won the series. But India, because Ishant was injured, he wasn't available, went on the defensive. You tried to play an extra batsman, dropped Stuart Binnie, got in Pankaj Singh in place of the injured Ishan Sharma. While you could have, and you had the option of playing a bowler who had a little more extra pace, a Varun Aaron made an impact in the last test match when he played. Because you noticed the English batsman struggled against that extra yard of pace or extra 2 yards of pace that Varun Aaron had. Pankaj Singh has a great record in domestic cricket. But the fact is, he didn't have the pace now. He doesn't have the pace now. He's not the Pankaj Singh 4 years ago or 5 years ago. He's labored on. So the pace is gone. He's more of a line and length and stock bowler. But Varun Aaron would have made a huge impact. Ishant is injured, no problems. You still persist with the same kind of a scenario. Short, fast, that Ishant could bowl is a similar length and a similar style that Varun Aaron can bowl.
Well, Roman, but it's something that when I was young, my mother used to do. Whenever I got bad scores, she used to pull my pants down and give me a spanking, really bad. And that's something, it's done with boys. The Indian squad, it's filled with young
boys. Do you do that to men? You do that to boys, all right?
It's with boys. It's with boys. You can do that because they say it's a young-blooded side with the likes of the average age being 27, 30, Mahendra Singh Dhoni being the most senior-most player. They're young boys. So what can be done with young blokes like these who have lost the concentration that's required from the world champions? We are the world champions in the one-day format. So what from here?
The key is, you talked about world champions in the one-day format, not the test format. We are not the best of touring sides. We don't really adapt great, very quickly to alien conditions, especially overseas conditions where the ball swings and seams. I don't think it's fair to blame Mahendra Singh Dhoni for what happened to India. Because as a batsman, if there's anyone else after Murali Vijay who got runs consistently when the chips were down, it was Mahendra Singh Dhoni. And then Bhuvneshwar Kumar towards the lower order. A lot of times, Dhoni saved you the blushes. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't have even gone past 150-200 in a couple of test innings. So, Dhoni did his bit with the bat. He wasn't absolutely great as an inspiring leader in the test match format. Something that's been said about Dhoni a lot. He finds himself a lot more comfortable in the coloured clothing because, that's the way the team resources are. He feels the moment you've got into a limited overs format, you've got bowlers who can contain, who can restrict. He can dominate with spin. In the test match, you cannot dominate with spin alone in English conditions. And two, you need to make things happen rather than wait for the batsman to make a mistake.
Absolutely, Raman. That's something very interesting to hear. But you mentioned Mahendra Singh Dhoni. It's been quite a long time since that salt pepper. It's becoming more conspicuous as just salt on his face. How do you think the Indian team at his helm is just all the disarray what we've seen in the test matches somewhere? I think he's taking it too seriously as far as the Indian skipper is concerned.
If you remember, 2 years ago, Mahendra Singh Dhoni had said after the England debacle that probably by the end of 2013, he would choose which format he's going to stay with it. He said, I cannot continue to play all three formats. I will choose and pick two out of three. And we all knew what he was hinting towards, that he'd probably choose, not probably, he would choose playing the one-day and T20 format and relinquish test captaincy. All that talk vanished once India won the Champions Trophy in 2013. There were no questions asked. And then West Indies came to India and we thrashed them inside 3 days, both the test matches. And then there was no talk.
Well, the West Indies you mentioned, Raman, they are coming to India again after this test match.
I wonder what will happen once India wins that test series.
Do you think it's planned?
If it is, then I think it's brilliantly planned.
But I just would like to end the show with just one-liners from you. I'm going to give you a name. I just want one-liners from you. Number one, a fact. 6 ducks in an innings from the Indians. That's a record now the Indians hold.
Well, roast turkey in England.
Virat Kohli.
Befuddled.
Chiteshwar Pujara.
Confused.
Duncan Fletcher.
Out of his depth.
Cyrus John.
Entertaining as ever.
Well, on that note, we'll be ending this episode and the podcast of Wow Cricket on clicksportsnow.com. It was me, Cyrus John, along with cricket commentator and expert Raman Bhanot signing off. But we'll be back of how India fares in the one-day series as well, hoping that they do well. Because yes, we are the 2011 World Champions. So, goodbye and we'll be back again. Stay tuned.